What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Live Podcast. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, alongside the Fantasy Hall of Famer Michael Fabiano and the Fantasy Viper Graham Barfield. So Antonio Brown, feet, man. I mean, we're gonna talk some Hard Knocks at the end of the show, but
gross, dude. I don't know, man.
Gross.
I was on TA last night and kind of poo-pooing AB and his feet and his helmet and his attitude and the move from Pittsburgh to Oakland, and those guys still on the show seems to love him. But
of course,
I am getting cold feet.
Oh man.
I feel like when Twitter, it comes to drafting.
Twitter, I think, has worn that joke out.
Really? I didn't see it. I thought I was being original.
One of the best AB memes I've seen, though, is like someone, when he was on the cover, I guess they had like the frostbite technology.
Yeah, apparently.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Apparently there's frostbite technology in the Madden game that he was in, and I don't know what that
means. Yeah, it was some sort of search engine or something was called Frostbite, I guess.
Yeah, and then the meme is like, I guess this is the new level of Madden curse.
It's gone that deep now, man. We'll talk about it at the end when we talk some Hard Knocks on this show, but yeah, I don't know. It's all weird. I still think the whole thing is comedy. Big show for you today. We will do a quick preseason week 2 preview, some things to watch there. As I mentioned, the Hard Knocks preview, or review, I guess I should say, for episode 2. And a special guest today, the one and only Evan Silva, will stop by the podcast, and he will chat a whole bunch of things with us. He's got a new venture, in case you don't know. He, Adam Levitan, a whole bunch of really smart fantasy writers are doing a new thing over at establishtherun.com. If you haven't checked it out yet, go do it. They are really, really smart people when it comes to this sort of stuff. So you should get on board and check that out as soon as possible. Normally, we go behind the glass and talk to our faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy Esquire. But Murph is on his way back home. He's going back to New York for a few days. So instead, we got Steve Manny behind the glass. Steve, what's going on, man?
What's going on? It's a fantasy draft week for me. And I've been spending all week getting ready for it. But I've been planning like the bachelor party aspects of it. So I don't know anything about football, so I'm hoping you can help me out.
So you've been getting the food and the beer and the beverages.
Correct. We're going to go down to Anaheim this weekend. We're going to catch the fights. We got a whole weekend plan, but I haven't thought at all about who to pick or, you know, those important aspects.
Where are you picking?
I was the last guy outside of the playoffs, 10-team league, so that would make me fifth.
Okay.
That would make me sick. No, that made me fifth.
Yeah, it's a good spot this year because you kind of get like a little bit of a smattering of the whole ADP blend when you pick right smack dab in the middle.
Did you ever stop to think that they made you plan all this other stuff on purpose so that you didn't have time to focus on?
No, we rotate strategy? This on a yearly basis. And
okay.
We've never done it out in LA. We're just kind of worked out, so it should be pretty cool. Friday night, all the guys are coming in, and man, it's going to be a fun weekend. That's like the best part about fantasy football for me.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, well, hopefully, we appreciate you sitting in, first of all, for Eddie and helping us out with this. But
yeah,
hopefully, if you sit and you listen to us, we won't confuse you too much, and you can pick up a few things that'll help you out with your draft.
Cool, let's do it.
All right. So, now that we've gotten all that out of the way, let's do some news.
Let's do the news.
Oh, the Andrew Luck watch continues. Man, it just keeps getting worse, man. So at first we thought maybe this was some sort of a muscle issue, that maybe it was a calf strain or something of that respect. Then a day or two ago, owner Jim Irsay said there's a little bit of a bone issue that he's dealing with. And now the latest thing is that it's a high ankle sprain, and GM Chris Ballard saying it's a thing that needs to be addressed. We'll definitely get into this with Evan Silva and get his thoughts on it. But, guys, we got to kick this around. I mean, it's just – I mean, I can't believe it's going to be like a couple years ago with the shoulder, right, where we just don't see him all year. But, Fabs, it just – it's getting harder to keep the faith with this thing.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, you mentioned it a couple of seasons ago when it was Jacoby Brissett. And this has got a domino effect, right? Because it's not just going to involve Andrew Luck's fantasy value, but the value of T.Y. Hilton and Ebron and Doyle, Paris Campbell. Is he draftable if it's Brissett and it's not Andrew Luck under center? Marlon Mack as well, to a lesser degree. But this is huge. Now, I do feel like at quarterback, it's not listen, Luck was tremendous last season, but we can afford to lose a big-time quarterback for some number of games because the position is so ridiculously deep. But where do you draft him? Do you pass on him? Is he now a 10th-round flyer? We don't know the answers to these questions because we don't know what his availability is for week one or going further down into the regular season. So we're all kind of paying attention like everyone else.
Right. If I'm drafting this weekend like you are, I'm not drafting him. I mean, it's pretty simple. There's just so many good quarterbacks this year. There's no reason to real take on that risk that he might miss even a game or two. There's just too many quarterbacks I like that are going later, and you can just be ready for week one.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the reality of it right now. But man, it's just it's a thing where there's always been so much optimism around him, especially his return, especially what we saw last year. He came back, he was healthy. They had an offensive line that could protect him, and he looked great. And now for this to kind of happen again.
That's the thing, though, is like if he can play at 85%, that O-line is so, so good. And they're getting the ball out of his hands so quickly that I think he can kind of just protect himself because the line is so good. And you know, the injury it seems manageable at the very least, but still not good.
Which is not a thing. That's not a thing we said a few years ago, though. I mean, that offensive line a few years ago was
wild.
Was bad.
I know. Now it's one of the three or four best in the league.
Hey, good job on getting that fixed. Down in Miami, Kenyon Drake was now spotted in a walking boot at practice. I mean, you want to talk about the hits just keep on coming. I mean, it just keeps going from bad to worse for Kenyon Drake. You know, first he was struggling to get touches with Frank Gore there. Frank Gore leaves, a new coaching staff comes in. Now Kalen Ballage is starting to muscle in on his territory, and now this walking boot. Fabs, I know you said you talked to some folks down there in South Beach. They said it's not necessarily a terrible thing, but I just feel like at this point, anything that is a negative for Kenyon Drake kind of gets amplified because Ballage is getting so much attention.
Yeah, it's not structural. Talk to Joe Shad quickly, who covers the Dolphins down there. But it's another knock against drafting Kenyon Drake, and I'm wondering at what point do we start moving Kalen Ballage in at least standard scoring leagues ahead of Kenyon Drake? Because it appears that he is in line to see enough touches to be productive, even if it's just as a flex starter. And if Drake is dealing with some sort of issue here, lower leg issue, that could vault Ballage even more. I'll tell you something right now. If you were drafting best ball leagues earlier in the offseason and you got Ballage in the 14th, 15th round, dude.
I'm raising my hand.
I mean, high five.
Yeah, no. I will say in the Dolphins preseason opener, Kenyon Drake was the first back on the field, got all eight first-team snaps, the first eight-team snaps. Then Ballage came in on the second series. So it does seem like at least Drake, like from a team perspective, was the number one. But obviously this injury is just going to take him off the field even further and give Ballage extra reps in the second and third preseason games. I will be surprised, I guess, since we don't necessarily know the details of the injury yet. I'd be surprised if we see him for the rest of the preseason.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. At this point, there's nothing to gain for the Dolphins by putting him out there at this point. Golden Tate loses his appeal. He will serve a 4-game suspension. He was knocked for violating the performance-enhancing drug policy. I mean, Graham, I think the biggest question now is, you know, with us knowing for sure that Tate is out, with Sterling Shepard dealing with a thumb injury, I mean, are there any pass catchers, any wide receivers there, you know, non-Evan Ingram division that you have any interest in New York?
Sure. I think if Tate falls far enough into the draft, like if he slips past, like let's say receiver 55, receiver 60, then I'm going to start, you know, kind of being interested in him as a receiver 5 or receiver 6, just kind of throw on my bench for the first 4 weeks. There's no buys. So there's not a huge, huge opportunity cost lost there. But I think, if anything, this is just makes me want to draft Evan Ingram more than I already did.
Yeah, dude, I feel like he's like one of the top like zero RB targets. Greg Roman is going to run the football. He's had success with running backs in terms of the fantasy production in the past. We've seen it. And Ingram, I mean, he's not young, but he's 29 years old and still has some tread left on the tires. He's a pass-catching back who I would not be surprised if he finished in the top 15 in PPR leagues at running back this season.
Other running back news. Damian Harris is, quote, clearly behind Sony Michel in Patriots camp. I know that, you know, there had been a little bit of buzz about Damian Harris coming into the year. And look, Fabs, there's a little bit of concern because Michel has had some injury problems throughout his career, even going back to college. Mm-hmm. I guess for me, the question is, you know, Michel is going to be there. Harris is going to try to work his way in. I mean, where does like James White, like how do these pieces all fit together knowing that, you know, the man who controls the playing time is Bill Belichick?
I know. I feel like James White is still the safest pick. I mean, typically people are playing in PPR leagues. I still feel like he's the safest bet because we know his role. His role in the offense is basically to be a wide receiver out of the backfield. You know, no running back has had, you know, more targets over the last 3 years than James White. He's right up there with Alvin Kamara and Christian McCaffrey. But I still feel like the narrative is the same, right? Sonny Michel looks like he's going to enter week one as the guy, which we kind of all projected.
Right.
I wouldn't call it hype over Damian Harris, but where we sort of like him is that Michel has dealt with the knee problems, mm-hmm. right? And he's had it last season. He's had it before this season started. He had it at Georgia. So at some point during the course of the season, does Michelle's knee flare up to the point where Harris gets a shot to be the guy? And then when he gets that shot, does he relinquish it? And so that's why Harris has never been a guy that you're drafting early or even in the middle of your draft. He's a late round flyer. He's a guy you're going to draft, sit on, and see what happens with Michel. And I'm still wary of Sony Michel. There's a lot of running backs that could fill that role between Harris, Michel. You got Rex Burkhead there as well. So I still don't see Sony Michel as anything more than maybe a high end three, a low end two, depending on the size of your league. And there's risk there.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, look. Just it's funny. Just when we think we figured out Patriots running backs, there's always a wrinkle.
You never do.
You never.
The only
really
constant
do.
Is James White is going to catch a. Or, sorry, crap.
Whoa! Hey now. Hey now.
Hey, we don't need a producer back there.
And also keep this in mind too. And so I just finished up these offensive coordinator coaches articles that'll be on the site at some point this week. I feel like great weight off my shoulders because this thing is they're massive. But McDaniels has only had two running backs during the course of his time as an OC or a head coach finish with more than 209 carries in a single season.
Wow.
I mean, like LeGarrette Blount and Stephen Ridley. So we see based on the numbers that the committee situation is very likely to happen. Now, Michel might have hit 250 had he not gotten banged up a little bit last season, but now with Harris in the mix,
I think
there's question marks.
I think he will hit 250, but again, the health is the biggest concern.
Yeah.
The biggest concern.
Michel could be a high RB2. Yeah. You know, he really could be, but can he stay on the field?
We should also note Damian Harris is dealing with like a hand injury I read this morning. He's not been able to practice, and that might have been the reason why he didn't play very much, he didn't play at all in the Patriots' first preseason game, too. So that could be another reason why he's behind Michel right now.
Yeah.
I like that Viper's salty today, though, and he threw out a little curse word there. That's good, man. Getting ready for the season.
I have to really tone it down on here, so I'm constantly monitoring this thing in the back of my head.
Yeah.
Last bit of news. The Panthers reportedly, this is according to Albert Breer of the MMQB, looking for a backup running back who could take some short yardage and goal line.
I just don't want it to be Jay Ajayi. I'm like, please, no, don't sign Jay
Ajayi.
I'm
laughing because that's not happening.
No. I mean, I feel like they already have one on their roster.
It's called Cam Newton.
Exactly, right. Like, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, so you're laughing. So that sort of answers my question, Graham. Like, you're not worried at all.
The goal line back is Cam Newton, and Christian McCaffrey will be the 1B to the goal line back. That's exactly what happened last year.
Right.
You know what was so funny last year is everyone thought, oh, McCaffrey can't run in between the tackles. He can't handle
yes,
the
goal line.
Yes, he
can. Carries. He did that well, at weirdly. College.
Huh.
I mean, you know, what's funny though,
because that coming.
He ran power in college.
Yeah. No, he did. He ran power in college. Although, you know, even coming out of Stanford, that was sort of the knock that he wasn't durable enough. And remember, this time last year, Jonathan Stewart was kind of getting some love, right? Because that was the whole hype. Like the idea that they were going to use somebody else as the goal line back, the number two option there to kind of take some of the pressure off. And so, like, Jonathan Stewart was kind of like a late round, like, oh, you know, maybe it's worth a shot. And, you know, obviously not.
And have you seen pictures of Christian McCaffrey's arms?
Well,
the dude is Captain America. He's fine.
All I know is there's that promo that we're running on our network with him underwater, like carrying the big weight, like jogging in a big pool and stuff like that.
I've seen it. And by the way, his like workout and eating regimen is insane. Like I read where he eats like multiple bowls of chili. Like it's just straight protein. I don't know, man. He's a freak. He's a total freak.
Yeah, I hope he doesn't do that before a game.
Well, obviously.
I don't know. Yeah, you know what? I mean, you want to do that.
He'd have to have an IV of, like, Tums and Zantac.
I mean,
well, yeah, he'd have to go to the can every other quarter.
Would you want to tackle that guy?
This is true.
So,
fair point.
That's true.
That's just a thing.
That is true.
So there you go. That is pretty much everything you need to know.
That was the news.
Joining us on the phone, he is one of the preeminent analysts in the fantasy football industry. I mean, I'm reading it off his site, Establish the Run, but it's absolutely true. It's not just hokum that they put up there to hype things up. You know him, you read him, you've probably followed him for a long time. It is the great Evan Silva. Evan, we appreciate the time, man. How is life now that you are sort of, you know, you are your own boss now? How are things?
Yeah, it's good, man. I worked for, you know, a big corporation for a long time. Roto World was owned by NBC, and it's kind of nice to just able to breathe a little bit more out working on my own, and not necessarily on my own. I'm working with Adam Levitan, and you know, we've been producing a bunch of podcasts, doing preseason DFS content. We've had a ton of success with that so far. We have a draft kit that you can purchase for season long. It's got top 150. It's got tiers. You know, it's got a ton of information in there. And then we're going to have a full season package as well. I write a matchups column where I break down every game every week, and that'll be in there. So yeah, we're off to a good start, and it's definitely exciting, and kind of nice to get away from the big corporation.
Yeah, and not for nothing. So our industry has grown, you know, exponentially mm-hmm. over the last decade or so. But there are still very few people that I actually read that are must read. Outside of the two gentlemen in this room sitting next to me, you're mm-hmm. one of them. And if you have never read Evan's matchups column during the regular season, you are missing out on one of the best fantasy football columns out there. So make sure you check it out. It is tremendous.
I got to say real quick, dude, you went next level, Evan, when you were doing a weekly matchups AAF column. Like, that was...
Dude, and you know what? I was reading it, and I won my damn league because of that.
So, I mean, let's talk some NFL fantasy football yeah. with you now that we got you here. The first thing, and the one that has become kind of the pressing issue over the last week or two, is this Andrew Luck situation, which started as kind of maybe a muscle thing, potentially. Then Jim Irsay yeah. saying it's like a bone issue. Now there's talk that this could be a high ankle sprain. I mean, we've sort of seen this movie before, Evan, with the shoulder issue. I mean, is it time for folks to kind of start panicking about Andrew Luck?
Yeah, the guy that I really rely on for information when it comes to situations like this is Dr. Chow, formerly, you know, the longtime team doctor for the then San Diego Chargers. I actually talked to him on the phone about this last night and this morning. He put out an article on it today. I think that my takeaways from talking to him and from reading his article are that there are a few certainties. First of all, he's really worried that it started, you know, way back in March. And what has the team been doing this entire time? You know, like, if a procedure is needed. Another thing is that it seems to Dr. Chow that they have not even made a firm, specific diagnosis as to what the problem is. And everything is just kind of still in a very nebulous stage. But there are two things that are certainties. One, Andrew Luck's status for week one is legitimately up in the air. And number two, if he plays in week one, he's going to be less than 100%. He did mention that because it is on Andrew Luck's left leg as opposed to the right one, where when you're dropping back, you know, you really hit that back foot hard and then you come through. He has a little bit more optimism because it's on Andrew Luck's left side, on his left leg. But it definitely could impact Andrew Luck's, his mobility and his scrambling. He may add fewer rushing yards. What I personally did is I had Andrew Luck as my quarterback three, and I moved him down below Baker Mayfield and Aaron Rodgers is my quarterback five. The question is, you know, should we start dumping him lower than that?
Yeah. And you're going to have that conundrum with his big offensive pieces too, because let's look back 2 seasons ago when T.Y. Hilton was catching passes from someone other than Andrew Luck, Jacoby Brissett, and he was super inconsistent and very unreliable. Where do you drop T.Y. Hilton? And then Paris Campbell, does he become basically undraftable? Devin Funchess is like the third tight end there. They have Eric Ebron and Jack Doyle. Those guys all see a decline in value. Where specifically, though, would you move Hilton if we come to discover that Luck is going to miss regular season games?
Yeah, that really gets difficult. And there are so many guys he impacts. I mean, it's Devin Funchess, it's T.Y. Hilton, it's even Marlon Mack is a, his upside is affected if Andrew Luck is not available for games. Paris Campbell, you kind of compound the fact that Paris Campbell has been out for like 2 weeks with a hamstring injury. We don't even know if he's going to start to begin the season at this point. Maybe they'll just go with Chester Rogers to start the season in the slot because he's been healthy and he's a veteran and he knows where to be. And Paris Campbell has been on the shelf. I have not personally adjusted down T.Y. Hilton or Eric Ebron or any of those guys yet. But yeah, I mean, as we creep closer to the season, hopefully we'll get some positive reports on Andrew Luck. This is a situation where Andrew Luck, it's a pain situation, and he can take a shot and that can help him through, and he could play in games after taking a shot. But so I think that at the end of the day, I think he's going to be ready for week one. I think that his performance may be impacted by the injury.
Right, Evan. I think one of the things, because quarterback is so deep this year, you don't have to take Andrew Luck at an injury discount this year. Even though we're expecting him to play at less than 100% in week one, you don't have to take him because quarterback is just so, so deep this year.
Yeah, getting away from the quarterback spot a little bit, Antonio Brown obviously is much in the news. I think the whole thing is comedy because I think, when it's all said and done, he's going to play.
Bro, his feet are nasty, dude. Did you see it on Hard Knocks last night? It's disgusting, man. They're legitimately gross.
Yeah. I mean, but where are you ranking him? Where are you feeling comfortable drafting him right now, Ev?
Yeah, so there are concerns that go beyond the fact that, this guy is, this guy is dealing with some sort of a foot infection or whatever. I don't know. Some people say it's frostbite. Other people say it's not frostbite. I don't know. But there are other concerns. I think that it's a significant downgrade from Ben Roethlisberger to Derek Carr. First of all, we see a lot of receivers when they change teams in the offseason. There's an initial in that first season with the new team. It's become a situation where you want to put a red flag on that receiver because we see that bust a lot. Receivers changing teams in the offseason. And then you add to the fact that they've had, 30 minutes together to practice so far in training camp. Derek Carr has never been an aggressive downfield passer. That's one thing that Ben Roethlisberger, he's been top 10 in the NFL each of the last 4 years in percentage of passes thrown 20-plus yards downfield. Never before in Derek Carr's career has he been higher than 16th. And last year he was actually dead last. Now you can point to the receivers that he had, and I understand that, but he really throughout his career year over year has not been an aggressive downfield passer. Antonio Brown was really carried last season by the fact that he scored his yards per target and his yards per route run were both 7-year lows last year, and he was really carried by the fact that he had a career high and a league high 15 touchdown catches. I mean, how many touchdowns are you projecting for Antonio Brown going to the Raiders? Yep. I like 5.5, 6.5 maybe. I mean, I don't think this is going to be a team that lights up the scoreboard from a scoring standpoint. And then, there's just a bunch of different concerns here that go beyond this weird stuff that is happening with his feet and with the helmet. And I mean, you start to question the guy's sanity. And if Antonio Brown isn't getting the ball from a quarterback that, has been like a check down artist for most of his career, how are these things going to go? it's a situation I'm avoiding, Faz, and I know that you are too.
Yeah, I mean, I got into this argument last night on NFL Total Access that Maurice Jones-Drew and Sean O'Hara, they attacked me because they just like to do that, and it's fun to debate with them. But I talked about some of the points that you had just mentioned. Further, the Steelers were first in pass attempts last year. The Raiders were 16th. They were 24th in offensive plays. The Steelers were fifth. And there were, you can't – people have to understand, you know, NFL is the ultimate team sport, okay? And you can't underestimate the rapport that Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown had together, okay? Big Ben knew where AB was going to be every time he ran a route, okay? Big Ben knew that even if AB was getting double covered, triple covered, he could throw the damn ball up into the air, and there's a good chance Antonio Brown was coming down with it. Now, that rapport is non-existent with Derek Carr right now. And yeah. people forget about that. And I have AB right now 13th. I may move him up a little bit. We'll see what happens, depending on what goes on with T.Y. Hilton and Andrew Luck. But right now, he's an end of the second round, beginning of the third round pick, and the touchdown regression is guaranteed. Like, if he has 8 touchdowns this season, I'd be like, that's a good season for Antonio Brown. How many Raiders wide receivers have we seen in recent years put up huge numbers? How many Raiders? What happened to Amari Cooper when he was at Oakland? He sucked. He was terrible. And then he goes to Dallas and he turns into a top 10 fantasy wide receiver. And I think people have to remember that as well.
Talking to Evan Silva of Establish the Run, you know him. Find him on Twitter at Evan Silva. Obviously, everybody loves Nick Chubb for good reason, because of what that offense can do this year. What has kind of puzzled me, Evan, is that people seem really high on Kareem Hunt. I mean, I'm seeing his name come off the board in the 8th or 9th round, and tell me if I'm wrong, but that just seems like a really expensive price to pay for a guy that you're going to have to just sit on for 8 or 9 weeks this year.
Yeah, if you play in a league where you have like 5 or 6 bench spots, he's entirely undraftable. I don't even think that Chris Herndon, who's going to be out until week 6 because he's got the 4-game suspension and he's got the early season bye, I don't even think you can draft him. So I think you certainly can't draft Kareem Hunt. It has to be like in a specific format. You have to at least have 8 bench spots, probably more likely like 10, because you're going to have to stash him through, you know, several waiver wire cycles and very, very valuable waiver wire runs like early in the season when we don't know as much as we think we know, and there's going to be some surprises, and, you know, there's going to be league-winning guys to pick up off the waiver wire within the first month of the season. And, I mean, who's going to be the first guy to go, you know, off your bench? If you have a 5 or 6-man bench, it's going to be the guy who isn't even going to play until week 10. And, you know, Kareem Hunt still needs to get reinstated. The Haslams have talked about this. They, Dee Haslam, the wife of Jimmy Haslam, was saying that it's not even a guarantee that he gets reinstated. He's eligible to return, but he also has to, you know, stay out of trouble and, you know, do the right things and show the league that he's, you know, got everything squared away. So that's not even a guarantee. I think you can take him like in a best ball league, but yeah, I mean, he should not be getting drafted in any leagues. I would say anywhere in the 5 to 7 man bench, you can't even draft them at all.
Yeah, Evan, I'm not a fan of taking 8 straight zeros either, especially in shallow bench leagues. And not only that, like, Nick Chubb is so, so good and so awesome. Like, there's no guarantee that Hunt, when he does come back and rejoins the Browns, there's no guarantee that he's going to have like some sort of locked in role where we feel comfortable starting him in our fantasy lineups. I'm fully with you. I pretty much have never drafted Kareem Hunt this summer or don't intend to at all.
One thing I've noticed you've been talking about, Evan, and I know you study this obviously maybe as much or more than anybody else, the rise of 12 personnel on the field, right? Basically the one running back, 2 tight ends. It seems to be the thing that is in vogue. For the folks who are kind of paying attention to this thing, I mean, are there teams you've identified that are doing it a lot and doing it well right now?
Well, the Colts did it well last year, and they were very, very flexible. Like when Jack Doyle was in, they were a heavy 2 tight end team. And then when Jack Doyle went out, they were heavy 11 personnel, 3 receivers. So, you know, they're kind of one of those teams that you really appreciate the way that they call plays because they just adjusted their personnel, you know. Some offensive coordinators will just say, oh, well, I'm going to run my scheme, you know. But these guys actually adjust their their offense and their personnel packages to fit their personnel, which makes plenty of sense, right? Makes complete sense, but not everyone does it. 12 personnel, the team that ran at the highest rate last year, of course, was the Eagles. You know, I don't think it necessarily has like a big fantasy impact. You know, it's more of like a real life discussion because, you know, just because the Eagles ran the most 12 personnel last year, that didn't mean that Dallas Goedert was, you know, a big time fantasy factor. And when Jack Doyle was healthy, along with Eric Ebron, you know, they kind of like cannibalized each other. You couldn't really, you didn't really love using either of them. I mean, Eric Ebron, when Jack Doyle was out last year, averaged 8.8 targets per game, which is sensational for a tight end. But then when Jack Doyle was in, he averaged 4.4 targets per game, and he was barely usable. You know, you had to like luck into a touchdown, which of course last year did happen more often than not. But yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting, like kind of wave of the future, real life thing for football.
Definitely. I mean, I think you and Warren Sharp have talked a lot about 12 personnel this offseason. I noted in my team previews column that the Colts used 12 personnel on 30% of their pass plays when Jack Doyle was healthy. That was the third highest clip in the NFL. But you're right. It doesn't necessarily have an impact on fantasy. You still have to know how these players are used. And we'll just use the Eagles as an example. Like Zach Ertz is typically not the blocking tight end when the Eagles go into 12 personnel. Dallas Goedert is. He's lining up on the line of scrimmage, and Ertz is used more of as a receiver. So he inherently has a more valuable role just in the context of that offense. And I think that's an important thing to note when we're talking about teams using 12 personnel and using these different personnel packages. It's not just about where they're lining up on the field, but it's also how they're used in the context of the offense.
Last thing before we let you go, obviously it's the middle of the preseason. For you, when you are watching preseason games, what are you looking at? How should people be evaluating these games?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just like everyone else that, you know, big plays, highlight plays. I have the highlight bias. And, you know, if a dude is out here making big plays, like, it's going to catch my eye and it's going to get me excited. But at the end of the day, the most important thing is, I think, usage in the preseason games. And we have not yet gotten to the point where we have big sample sizes of usage so far with the first team. That really comes out of that third preseason game where sometimes we can get up to 2.5 quarters of the first team. And we just want to see, you know, who's running with the ones. And what, because a lot of that is dictated by, especially for veteran quarterbacks, it's dictated by quarterback preferences. You know, what running back is out there with the ones? What running back does Aaron Rodgers trust to have behind him? I did think there was one interesting takeaway from the first week of preseason. And again, we're going to have much bigger sample sizes as we get to that third preseason game. But from the first week, I thought it was interesting that Kyler Murray was out there for 11 snaps and David Johnson was out there for 7, which is fine. But Chase Edmonds was out there for 4 of those 11 first-team snaps. And Chase Edmonds, if the Cardinals are able to execute, like, running a ton more plays, which they have only one way to go up because they finished 31st yeah, in the NFL awful. In plays last year. And I don't think that they're going to run, you know, 80 or 90 or whatever they're talking about. But if they can get up to, like, into the top 5, you know, I think that Chase Edmonds might be able to carve out a little bit of standalone value, and he's a guy that I really like to take late in drafts because he's got a shot at that sort of flex option, you know, like an Austin Eckler sort of play. And then, you know, he's got the big upside if something happens to David Johnson.
Yeah, it's funny, right? This whole Cardinals offense is going to be fun to watch. 56.4 snaps per game last year during Kingsbury's time at Texas Tech. The Red Raiders led the FBS in snaps per game, and they averaged 82.6 snaps per game last season. Like, that's a lot of plays.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, Evan, hey, man, we appreciate the time. We appreciate the insight. Looking forward to seeing more of your stuff over at Establish the Run. Folks can come and check you out there. You, Adam Levitan, I mean, you've got Josh Hermsmeyer contributing, Pat Thorman. You guys have – you've put together a solid roster to start this thing. So
I appreciate it.
Yeah, man, so best of luck with that. We appreciate the time. And let's stay in touch during the season, man.
Absolutely. Take it easy, dudes. Good luck this year.
All right,
thanks,
man.
Thanks, Evan.
Thanks again to Evan Silva for stopping by. It's always good to talk to him. It was fun. In fact, Graham, you and I got to sit and have some beers with him in February back in Indianapolis after the combine.
It was great. He got mad at you about running backs, though, if I remember.
Yeah, we kind of got into it about running backs.
I shouldn't say mad. We just gotten.
Well, what was the
discussion.
Conversation? What happened?
Well, it wasn't mad, but basically, I sort of pushed back as I am wont to do about this whole RBs don't matter thing.
You have great points.
You know, and Evan vociferously disagreed with me. That's it.
I think it's like more of a humanist thing. Like, we just want to see them get paid.
That's kind of how I feel about it. Although I do think that some of these guys actually matter more than others. You know, let's see if the Cowboys are willing to go into weeks 1 and 2 without Ezekiel Elliott. See, there you go. there's the proof that some running backs do matter a little bit more than others.
Listen, man, I'm a running backs guy. I love that position, and I really hope Zeke is back. I hope Gordon's back. It sucks that these guys don't get paid and they don't get the respect they deserve contractually, at least in some cases.
Yeah.
But we'll see, man. We'll see. We talked about it on the last podcast, how things just keep building and building and building. First it was Gordon, and it was Zeke, his AB's feet. Now it's Andrew Luck. Things are getting confusing with some of these elite players right now.
Yeah, it really is. And so we're going to be here to talk about it and probably pull out our hair about it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Week 2 of the preseason kicks off on Thursday. We got a whole full slate of games going all through the weekend. So a few things to keep our eye on. Of course, we're not going to talk about every game, but just a few things that I'm interested in, you guys are interested in. We can kind of bat around a little bit. Cardinals and Raiders get going on Thursday night. And, you know, Graham, we didn't see a lot from Kyler Murray. They kind of kept it sort of plain. I mean, he looked good for what they asked him to do.
Right.
I would think this week we want to see them maybe put a couple more wrinkles into what they're doing.
Sure. Cliff Kingsbury said before and after the game, he's like, we're going to keep this vanilla. We're going to keep it real, real simple. They just ran a bunch of 11 personnel, put Max Williams in the slot a few times. I hope we see a few wrinkles. There was one little wrinkle where they kind of ran like an RPO screen, which is kind of fun. Good little look to Fitz. But I don't think we'll see a whole lot of what Cliff and Kyler and the Cards have planned until week one, just because they're going to try and play fast and play super aggressive, and they just have no real reason to do that in the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, they really don't, but I think, you know.
It's nice to see Kyler spin it, though.
You know?
Like, he looks so comfortable back there. I know it's only 7 throws, but.
And he's like a little dude.
Yeah.
It's great, man. And for those of us who are sort of vertically challenged, it's very exciting.
This has nothing to do with anything, and this probably should have been a thing that was pointed out during draft season. Everybody keeps talking about like him being not tall or whatever. They don't have short linemen in the Big 12, right? Like, I mean, he dealt with tall people in college.
You know? Brees is not tall. Russell Wilson's not tall. Doug Flutie wasn't tall.
So,
still isn't.
I don't know. Like, everybody seems like that's a big deal. And I'm like, well,
Drew Brees does make me laugh, though. Like, when he's under center, like, you can clearly tell he's craning his
like, like, you want to get him a box to stand on.
In fairness, I'm Drew Brees' height. So, if I were back there, I'd be doing the same
thing. Eagles at Jaguars. I have sort of wavered on this Eagles backfield. Like, early on, I was definitely on the Jordan Howard train. Now, in the last week or so, all the things I've read have sort of started to sway me a little bit more toward Miles Sanders. Fabs, I think that's the one thing I want to watch out of this thing is how this thing breaks down. You know, who's getting the first team snaps and the reps. You know, as Evan talked about, kind of watching these games and seeing who's on the field and when. I want to start to figure out which one of these backs is going to be, I won't say the main back, but maybe gets more touches.
Yeah, I always go with upside in cases like this. I don't feel like Jordan Howard has much. I think Sanders is the guy that has the higher ceiling. But, you know, we have seen in 3 years that Peterson's been the guy in Philadelphia. He hasn't had a single running back average more than 12.9 touches per game. Not one.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Ryan Matthews back in 2016. He also hasn't had a running back finish better than 24th in fantasy points at the position, but he also has not had a back.
Right, that was my question.
Like Miles Sanders. And so hopefully this is a trend that is dodged this season because of the presence of the Penn State alum.
Yeah, that was my thought. It's just like, okay, yeah, he's never done it before, but he's never really had any guys that you feel comfortable with.
Right. I have been saying that Miles Sanders is a league winner. in the sixth, seventh round for that reason. I mean, the Eagles have tried their hardest. It's not like they haven't tried. I mean, they traded for Jay Ajayi before the trade deadline. They were linked to Dalvin Cook early in the draft in 2017. They were rumored to be interested in LeSean McCoy a couple years ago, and he was still a talented back. I think they finally have that three-down player in Miles Sanders here.
Yeah,
and you talk about upside, too. I mean, Jordan Howard is never and never will be a pass catcher. Miles Sanders, at the very least, can do that, and that has value immediately in PPR leagues.
Yeah, you know, our pal Mike Clay from over at ESPN, I think, made a good comparison when he compared Sanders to the son of Kerryon Johnson, where at the beginning of the season, you know what, maybe it's going to be a little bit of a slow go, but at some point during the course of the season, Sanders' talent is going to outshine Jordan Howard, and he's going to get an opportunity.
That's a really good comparison.
And that's sort of why I have started to kind of move closer to Miles Sanders in this one. I mean, my original thought with Jordan Howard isn't necessarily that he's going to be some huge, you know, boom guy. I mean, we sort of know what he is right now, but it was more that he's the guy, at least early in the year, that gets those goal line opportunities, gets kind of those short yardage things. But I think if you're talking about more of a higher ceiling, then I think it's definitely Miles Sanders. Dolphins at Bucks. I'm thinking all about running backs here. I mean, originally I had sort of written, you know, Ballage versus Drake, but obviously we talked about Kenyon Drake and the fact that we may not see him for the rest of the preseason. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I still want to see what Kalen Ballage has to offer, what he can do. And on the flip side, I want to start to get a better feel of this Peyton Barber versus Ronald Jones thing. I think, you know, look.
We are lost on that.
We are so lost on that right now.
Totally lost. I have no idea what's. We don't hear anything like, you know, you hear a report that Ronald Jones broke a big run only to fumble, you know, in camp. Like, that is one of the situations I don't have a clue. I'd rather have Ronald Jones because I'd rather have the upside there. I have no idea what's going to happen in that backfield. None.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's sort of the thing. You know, like, Ronald Jones is the upside play because Peyton Barber's another guy. We sort of know who he is. I mean, he's steady. He's not spectacular. But it seems right now, Graham, it seems like he's kind of the number one guy until further notice.
He is, and he was last year, and he'll continue to be. I mean, this is why tracking preseason usage matters so much. Last year, Ronald Jones was behind Jaquizz Rodgers. Like, Jaquizz Rodgers played more first-team snaps last season than Ronald Jones. Ronald Jones struggled to get on the field early in the year. He struggled all throughout the year when he was on the field. Now, this preseason, in their opening preseason game, Jameis Winston plays 12 snaps. Peyton Barber was on the field for 8 of those 12 snaps. Mm-hmm. There was a report that came out this morning that the Bucs are basically trying to restore Ronald Jones's confidence.
Saw that. Yep.
Yeah.
He's now trying to put on weight this offseason. Like, I mean, I don't want to bash Ronald Jones more than I have, right? Yeah. There comes a point in drafts where I'm willing to take him.
Right.
It's usually like 12th or 13th.
And Arians has liked to use a featured back, too, you know, during his time as an OC or a head coach. You look at the numbers, you know, runners have averaged 18.4 touches or more 8 times during his 15 seasons as either a head coach or an OC. You know, David Johnson in 2016, Willie Parker, Rashard Mendenhall back in Pittsburgh. So he's liked to use these guys. He just doesn't have one right now. And hopefully Rojo, or maybe it's Barber, I don't know. Hopefully one of these guys establishes himself as the more useful fantasy option. Otherwise, we are absolutely going to be just throwing darts at this backfield all season.
File this under, you know, baby steps forward, right? I mean, you know, Ronald Jones last year had 23 carries for 44 yards. Mm-hmm. In his one preseason game, he had 4 carries for 18. So, you know, right? Progress. Progress.
When you say baby steps, it just makes me think of what about Bob?
the Bucs are also absolutely a candidate for picking up a veteran who's, you know, dropped or cut in the, you know.
I'm surprised they haven't kicked the tires on Jay. Like,
I'm concerned. You know? I'm concerned. I think Ajayi's got his knee might be.
They're just
might
done.
Be, yeah. Might be worse.
Could
than,
be.
Yeah.
Yep.
It could be a medical issue.
Possible.
For him.
Yes.
Patriots at Titans. The only thing I could think of is Jacoby Myers for real. Like, you know, I know I made the Celino Barnes joke on the podcast.
It was well done.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, he obviously had the huge breakout game. You know, I know he very much was staying humble about it in the post game comments. And Bill Belichick, in typical Belichick fashion, basically came out and said, yeah, he's got a long way to go. He's got a lot of things to learn, which, you know, I mean, you can't get more Belichickian than that. But I think for the rest of us, like, he legitimately had a good game last week. And I guess, Fabs, we just want to see if, like, that's for real, if he can do it again, or if this just was a one-week wonder sort.
Yeah. See, for me, like, I think it's a one-week thing. I don't know that he's going to come in and make a fantasy impact, yeah, to be quite honest with you. But I'm also I'm like a prove-it-to-me kind of guy. And so it's nice to see what he did in the first preseason game, put up some nice numbers. But, you know, would we be shocked if he comes in this game and does absolutely nothing? No. And that's sort of when I think the correction will come and people will start to think, maybe this guy's not somebody I'm going to take a late flyer on.
Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon. He's coming back, guys.
Oh, man.
You know, when?
It's funny, we talk about Patriots in the preseason, and the name that always pops up is Zach Sudfeld to me, right? Like the week, Gronk was hurt, and it was like, hey, they're going to be auditioning new guys. Everybody's like, hey, man, let's look at Zach Sudfeld. I think he like had like one target and zero catches, and it's like, all right, well, that's over.
Yep,
that's it.
There's been so many of those guys over the years, but Sudfeld's a funny one.
Sudfeld's a good one. Yeah. Last one that I got here, Niners at Broncos, and mostly just because I want to know, Graham, which of these Niners receivers is going to take a step forward, right? I mean, the reports are that Dante Pettis has sort of underwhelmed in camp. Trent Taylor is not healthy right now. Marquise Goodwin, for all the excitement potential around him, he's been inconsistent on the field right now. And I know we all sort of believe that George Kittle can't repeat what he did last year because he was setting records, but it feels like none of these other guys take a step forward that Kittle at least is going to see another boatload of targets this year.
This is the number one thing I'm going to be watching on Thursday night, is how the Niners align and who gets snaps where with the first team offense. You mentioned it, though. I mean, the concern still remains for me, though, with Kittle. Like, sure, no one has truly taken a step forward, but it doesn't mean that there are fewer competent pass catchers on the field. Mm-hmm. I think Deebo Samuel and Jalen Hurd are going to present pretty significant opportunities to take away some targets for Kittle. But still, yeah, I mean, Kittle is going to be the lead target for this 49ers team. It's just a matter of where he goes in drafts. But yeah, I've been really surprised to see Kyle Shanahan just absolutely poo-pooing Dante Pettis after he played through so many injuries last year.
Right.
He must be having a really, really tough camp.
Yeah, it seems like it. It seems like it. And back to Kittle, I get it. He was tremendous last year, but Marcus knows this. He's been working with me for a long time. I always fear the magical season. And I like looking at historical trends. Obviously, it's one of the fun things. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to predict the future, but in a lot of cases, it does. But in NFL history, there's only been 10 instances where a tight end has had 1,200 plus yards in a single season. Two of them came last year with Kelce and George Kittle. In the previous 8 instances, only 2 tight ends got to 1,000 yards the following season. And in 5, the players failed to reach 950 yards the following season. In all, the average yards a tight end recorded following a 1,200 plus yard season is 918. So if Kittle comes out and gives you 950 yards and 6 touchdowns.
Pretty good.
It's pretty good. It ain't 1,305,
right?
But it's pretty good. But that's why I don't want him in the third or fourth round. I just don't.
Yeah, and I saw him earlier this summer going ahead of like Mike Evans in the second round, which was a little
spicy for me.
Yeah, he's finally fallen back in.
Bro,
his
you
third
gotta
round,
know. So. You got like it's gotta be. You gotta know, like Kelce, Ertz also to a degree. You gotta know it's gonna happen, okay?
Right.
Because Would any one of us in this room be shocked if O.J. Howard, Evan Engram, Hunter Henry outscored Kittle? No.
Yeah. I would say this. For Kittle, the 5 touchdowns is definitely duplicate. You know, he can duplicate that. It's the 1377 that...
He's never going to do it.
That's
never.
It's a little difficult.
Yeah.
It won me quite a few jelly beans last year. I wasn't pissed.
So there you go. There's our look at some of the things to keep an eye on in the preseason. I guess at this point I should promote the fact that NFL Network actually has a triple header on Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern. It is Browns at Colts, 7:30 Eastern, Chiefs at Steelers, and then 10 Eastern, Cowboys at Rams. Oh, it's going to be at the Coliseum.
No, it's not. It's in Hawaii.
Oh, really?
It is in Hawaii.
I was so pissed because I saw that and I'm like, ooh, I'm going to get to bring Matthew to a Cowboys game.
Yeah.
And so I texted my contact with the Rams and I said, hey, I want to go to the Cowboys Rams. Which one? The one in Hawaii or the one in Dallas? I'm like,
Huh? Oh, well.
Ah, damn, they're not playing in L.A. The Rams only have one more preseason game in L.A. I think it's like a couple of weeks. I might be against the Chiefs. But
it won't matter because Sean McVay doesn't play anybody.
No, this is true. But I was mad. I was like, oh, dude, man, I wanted to see the Cowboys because I never get a chance to see them. So.
Man, if you want to see John Kelly, this is your – oh, I guess you're missing the chance.
What if Kelly comes out and, like, starts ahead of Henderson again.
Darrell Henderson.
And, like, everything is going to just go. That's one of the guys I'm most interested to see, too, is like what Henderson does.
Yeah. If he starts ahead of Darrell Henderson and has a couple of big runs, then the fantasy Twitter is going to lose its ever-loving mind.
Yeah.
Before we go, obviously, Hard Knocks Episode 2 was last night. Mm-hmm. We sort of started talking about Antonio Brown at the start of the show, his feet. In case any of you missed it on Instagram when he posted it originally, he showed the world what his feet looked like, and boy, it's not good.
It's ugly.
Although he said his feet got circumcised, which
I think he was trying to say the skin is peeling back.
Yes,
which was, I mean, gross. If we want to be in the strict literal sense of like what that is, sure. But I would have used a different word.
I would dare say there are some rabbis and some folks who do that thing for a living that would probably disagree with AB's comparison.
Oh.
But interesting nonetheless. I would say a couple things I took away from it. The episode, I should say. And Dan Hanzus, who is, you know, our resident Hard Knocks expert, who does a great recap of it every single week, and he pointed this out too in his
Hanzus.
Derek Carr's future might be in doubt with the Raiders, but as long as he's there, he is solid as the QB1. I mean, the Glennon Nathan Peterman competition is ugly now.
Yeah, Nathan Peterman's the guy that you want starting against your fantasy defense.
Yeah,
that's. I'll never forget that game. What do you have? Like six picks?
Five in the first half, which is great because we got to hear Matt Money Smith's call of it too on the show.
Chargers defense was like ridiculous that week.
That's a bad situation.
Think about it though, Marcus.
My question is, how does Mike Glennon keep getting jobs?
Mike Glennon paid. Remember? He got paid. He was going to be the guy in Chicago, was it, right?
Yeah, it was
after
Chicago.
The Tampa Bay.
He's tall. Let's you want to flash back. Mike Glennon is the guy who forced Russell Wilson out of NC State.
Oh, God.
Russell Wilson was the starting quarterback at North Carolina State.
Yep.
Mike Glennon was on the roster. They didn't think that Russell Wilson was going to be able to get the starting job, so he left and went to Wisconsin. And now here we are.
Do you guys want to – I mean, you want to go down the rabbit hole. You talk about bad backups. If Patrick Mahomes ever got hurt, you know who their backup is?
Is it the
– Chad Henne.
Yeah, it's Chad Henne.
Oh, because Tyler Bray's not there anymore.
It's Chad Henne. Like, there are some backup quarterbacks in this league that you do not, as a fantasy owner, want to see step on the field. Matt Ryan goes down. It's Mr. Pick Six.
Hey, speaking of Hard Knocks, I mean, if Jared Goff goes down, it's Blake Bortles, baby.
Although, you know,
Bortles is actually one of the best.
Honestly,
realm of backup quarterbacks, like Blake Bortles actually isn't so bad. Yeah.
My goodness, great. I mean, if Baker goes down, you're looking at Drew Stanton.
Well,
you know, let's pray. I mean, Tom Savage is the backup in Detroit.
Guys, is it just me or has this Hard Knocks just been kind of boring?
It's been kind of dull.
It hasn't been that good.
I was sort of getting to that. Like, I feel like the Raiders have gotten a lot of creative control over this one because, like, we haven't really gotten any, like, you know, behind closed doors coaches meetings. Like, everything we've heard Gruden say is basically like stuff he would say to the media, except with the added benefit if he throws in a few more F-bombs.
Yeah.
The best thing we've gotten out of Mike Mayock so far is him shaming Max Crosby for not knowing George Clinton and Parliament fucking Funkadelic. You know, like it just has been dull. Like, there are no great characters really.
It's pretty obvious the Browns gave full access to HBO last year, and
right?
It made for some really fun. Well, Hugh Jackson didn't mean for them to be funny, but some pretty funny gaffes by Hugh Jackson.
And you would really
meetings.
Think that, like. I mean, it's all Antonio Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what we're all watching for because we want to know if we can get any nuggets about what his situation is with these damn feet.
But even that has been, like, sort of
right.
So-so.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, Gruden's been fun. I'd like to see more of Mike Mayock because we're NFL folks and we love Mike. I'd like to see a little bit more of him. But, yeah, I mean, Josh Jacobs?
Yeah,
Where's Josh Jacobs been? I don't know.
We've seen none of Josh Jacobs. Like, the only thing close to a fun character is Jonathan Abram.
That's it.
Yep.
That was it. You know, like, the first week, he's basically digging in Derek Carr's pockets to, like, you know, get free food out of him. This week, the show ended with him saying that, you know, Tom Brady's old enough to be my daddy. Tom Brady could be my daddy. Like, that was funny.
Yeah.
We just haven't had any really good characters.
I think we were spoiled. The Browns just had so many either guys with great personalities or really smart guys or just, I don't know. Myles Garrett was awesome last year, too.
It's yeah.
Yeah, it just seems like they don't have a ton of players with a lot of personality on that team.
You know, the Abrams, what's the over-under on him getting fined for hits this season?
Oh, he's going to get a couple. He'll probably get a couple of envelopes in his locker.
Yeah, he will.
Yeah, it's just weird. I mean, but you would have thought, I mean, between Antonio Brown, Richie Incognito, who has been kind of a choir boy in the first couple of episodes. Like, you know, he's been the voice of reason. Like, this is where we are now. Richie Incognito is the voice of reason.
He was talking about counseling, too.
Right. Yeah. We've seen none of Vontaze Burfict. He's still there, right?
Is that on purpose?
I don't know, but like...
I don't know.
You know, like the only slightly unhinged person we've seen has been John Gruden.
Which we knew he would be unhinged. He's always unhinged.
He is great, yeah.
Always unhinged.
But I mean, like, you know, it would be very Raiders for them to go out and make a splash in getting Antonio Brown and drafting Josh Jacobs and signing Tyrell Williams and being a 5-win team.
I know. It's funny because we haven't heard from Tyrell Williams. I think there were a couple of shots of him in this mm-hmm. last episode. Mm-hmm. Also, like things that they haven't really talked about. I mean, they haven't mentioned at all that this was the Raiders' last year in Oakland, right? Mm-hmm. They're moving to Las Vegas next year. No mention of that so far. No mention of the fact that for Derek Carr, like, he's the franchise quarterback for now. But this is very much a prove-it year for him. Like, yep. There are storylines that I don't think they've explored so far. And, you know, we're through two of the five episodes. So,
yeah.
You know. Also, random aside, I always think it's weird that Liev Schreiber was the narrator because it doesn't sound like him.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I always sound like, yeah,
it doesn't sound like him at all. I mean, yeah. You know, my girlfriend and I were watching it and I was like, yeah, that's the narrator. She's like, who? And I said, Ray Donovan. She's like, what? Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like him.
Doesn't sound like
it Ray doesn't Donovan. Sound like him. Yeah. So, hey, before we go, we should again remind people that we're going to be live on August 26th at 8 p.m. at the Yard House in Marina Del Rey. So for all of our Southern California folks out there, please come by. We're going to be doing the podcast there. We're going to be doing some Q&A. We're going to do some trivia. Mm-hmm. And four people are going to be able to join our podcast listeners league, which I'll be setting up here shortly. So make sure if you are in Southern California, come by, check it out. You know, you could buy Graham and Marcus a beer. I don't really drink beer, but you can get me a ginger ale. It's fine.
I was going to say an easy way to get into the listener league. Just buy me all my beer.
That's I'll get it. You in.
We are shameless.
Graham's
like that.
Easy like that. Yeah.
We are shameless.
So definitely come by.
No problem with that.
We're looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it should definitely be fun. And we will keep promoting it. We'll keep reminding you, until we get up to
it. And at some point as well, we will send out something via social media to have people answer trivia questions for a shot to get one of the other four spots in this league. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
It'll be your opportunity to tell people on social media that you kicked our ass in a fantasy football league. And ultimately, that's what everyone seems to want, guys.
Yeah, exactly. So, Steve, hopefully you have learned something today.
Yeah, so Pat Mahomes, first round. That's the plan, right?
No. Yeah, exactly.
Were your headphones off?
Yeah,
done our job.
Go with that. Let me know how that works out for you.
All right, we'll do.
All right, cool. Hey, that's it. We are done. As always, we appreciate you listening. Thanks again to Evan Silva for stopping by as well. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, what doesn't kill you just gives you a really dark sense of humor. We'll see you on Monday.